The Contenders is a proud member of the Cage Club Podcast Network.
For other great shows about movies and pop culture, go visit cageclub.me. That's cageclub.me.
This is everything I need to do before I leave for college.
Hand job, blow job, rim job. Shocker, one who shocks. Maybe it's some kind of surprise.
Wow, I had no idea that you could be so
sophisticated.
Slutty.
He's out of my league now, but not once I learn how to pearl necklace him. Huh. Actually sounds really elegant.
It's not.
Welcome to The Contenders, the show about the movies made by and starring women who refuse to play by the rules. I am Tobin Addington.
And I'm Aislinn Addington. And today we have a very special guest, my friend and colleague, Colin. Hi, Colin.
Hey, I could have been a contender, but I guess I am now. So
we're good. You are now.
Yes, officially
you
are.
Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And we brought Colin in to talk to us about a movie from 2013 called The To-Do List. Now, had either of you seen, Aislinn, had you seen The To-Do List before we decided to do this as our episode?
Yes, I had, Tobin. I saw it in the movie theater.
You did?
I did, as a very big Aubrey Plaza fan. And as you noticed, there were many a friendly face in this movie. And so I was interested in the people. I did not remember some of the details, if you will, of the piece. But yes, I saw it in the theater. Colin, have you seen it before?
No, this was actually one of those weird movies with the weird phenomenon. It completely passed me by. Certain movies did that because I was deployed for quite a few years, and in 2013 I was deployed as well, so just came and went without me even knowing about it.
And Tobin, how about you?
I had watched like the first 5 minutes of it, I think. And I forget, I didn't turn it off for any particular reason. I wasn't scandalized or anything. I don't know what happened. So I'd seen the first 5 minutes of it, but I'd not seen anything past that. And I had kind of been aware of it as it was, was it a Sundance movie or, I can't remember. It was in the ether a little bit, but I had never seen it all the way through. So this was my first watch of The To-Do List.
Could you, while I'm asking the questions, Tobin, could you help us out and give us a little bit more history into this film?
Sure. It's hard to find a lot of the history, the making of The To-Do List. But the two things that jumped out at me were that the original title for the movie was The Hand Job. For who knows what reasons, the movie had a hard time getting financed.
You don't say.
Yeah. And I guess, everybody would want to read everybody in Hollywood probably wants to read a script called The Hand Job that's getting buzz. But then I'm wondering then maybe something in the kind of content that it is, particularly centering around women's sexuality, maybe threw people a little bit. The other interesting bit of film history that will mean something to Aislinn and to me is that the writer-director Maggie Carey grew up in Boise, Idaho, where the movie's set, and she graduated from the University of Montana in Missoula with a degree in English. That's our hometown. She was in our hometown at one point or another for school. Those are the two bits of film history that I have. Aislinn, would you tell us who are the women involved in major roles? Who are the ladies in charge of The To-Do List?
Happy to. As you mentioned, writer-director Maggie Carey. Actors Aubrey Plaza, Alia Shawkat, Sarah Steele, Rachel Bilson, and the love of my life, Connie Britton. Producers include Maggie Carey, Tracy McGrath, Sharla Sumter Bridget, Jennifer Todd.
Jennifer Todd. Yes. Both Jennifer's Todd.
Do you want me to do the whole line again?
No, that's funny.
Okay. casting, Cara Levine. Set decoration, Cassandra Fuot. And costume design, Tracy Gigi Field.
I couldn't wait to see how you were going to pronounce Cassandra's last name.
It's probably Fuot, but I don't know, man.
I like how you went for it, though.
Oh, my God. I would have stepped on alias shot that.
Oh, I'm sure I didn't say it right, but I said it confidently. So
yeah, you had the ruse working for me.
All right, Tobin. Mm-hmm. Because this is a lesser known film and because mm-hmm. this is a segment in each episode of our program, mm-hmm. would you please give a short summary of the to-do list?
Yes, I adapted this from what I found online. Feeling pressed to become more sexually experienced before going off to college, A student Brandy Clark makes a list of things to accomplish before the end of the summer, with and sometimes despite the help of her friends, her lifeguard co-workers, her older sister, and her parents, Brandy ends up learning as much or more about herself as she does about the birds and the bees.
Aw, that makes it sound sweet. Yeah. And there are aspects that are, and I just need to say, because I sort of am the one that brought us all here, I remember now why. And it's that I've wanted to talk to you about this movie for a while, Towen, because there are aspects of it. There are lines in it and even like conversations that I think are really funny and brilliant. And there's some moments where it happens on our podcast sometimes where we say, oh yes, this definitely had a woman somewhere mm-hmm. in the mix. And yet it's like not a good movie. You know, it's one of those where the ingredients, there's some good stuff in there, mm-hmm. but so that's what I start y'all with as my, yeah, I'm a little bit puzzled. I enjoyed it, but I'm a little bit puzzled. Other big picture reactions?
Ooh, so to me, it kind of felt like if it weren't for the predominantly female cast, it could have been, you know, any coming of age boy nerd discovering his sexuality type of movie. Aubrey Plaza did make it interesting, though, probably more interesting than it would have been with sort of a coming to age nerd movie with what's the dork's name that was in that other sex movie?
J.D. Qualls?
Is that his name? The Weasley guy?
I love that that's where you went.
From Road Trip?
Road Trip.
I'm so sorry.
No, not DJ Qualls. No, the nerd who was in this movie.
Oh, yes. Oh,
Christopher Mintz-Plasse.
Yes.
Wow, you knew his name off the top of your head?
Yeah, McLovin? Yeah.
Wow, good on you.
I know a lot of dumb things off the top of my head, Colin.
I never, in 1,000 years, gun to my head, never would have been able to pull that one.
Absolutely. I think we've seen that movie, right?
Yeah.
We've seen that, the McLovin movie. What is that one?
Oh.
Superbad?
Superbad. Yeah. Superbad. Tobin and I in the theater went to American Pie together with
friends.
It wasn't like
opening
a weird
night.
Brother-sister date. but I think we've seen it and we're more used to it that way. Mm. And some of those are more successful than others, of course. So I love that this is lady-centered. And you, of course, at some point, you know, I'm going to want to talk about the parents for a long time. But, did you like the movie, Colin?
I did, yeah. It's similar to what you said. It can't by any means call it a great movie, but it was a fun romp.
Yeah, certainly. Tobin, did you enjoy the romp?
I didn't.
Oh, no!
I mean, I think I had a very similar reaction to the one that you did, Aislinn, which is that, and sounds like Colin did too, which is that it didn't seem to live up to the sum of its part. Like, you know, like there were parts that were interesting. There were moments that were interesting. There were sort of glimmers, but I stopped believing in the Brandy Clark character pretty early in the movie. Mm. And she just felt so artificial to me. So kind of cartoony almost. Hmm. Like I didn't buy her humanity as much. And Aubrey Plaza is doing all she can, I think.
Right.
It kept reminding me of the main characters in Booksmart who feel so lived in, even though they are hysterical and goofy and, you know, things are in the extreme. But I so fundamentally believed the women in those movies. And this, it felt more posturing in the way that so many of those male teenage coming of age raunchy comedies do, that it's all, it felt like there was too much posture, I think. I didn't really enjoy it. I mean, I like parts of it, but yeah, I wouldn't recommend this movie to people.
So this may or may not make sense to other people. So it's a great thing to share in a podcast. For me, it's like a chocolate chip cookie. And here's why. For me, chocolate ruins a chocolate chip cookie. Like, all I've ever wanted in my life is a chocolate chip cookie with no chocolate chips in it, right?
You know you can do that, right?
I know.
But why would you?
Okay, that aside, though. So it's like, yes, it's
if that's all you wanted.
I want a trampoline also, but that's neither here nor there.
You can get one of those too.
I'm not allowed. But like a chocolate chip cookie is good, but as I'm eating each bite, I'm always disappointed when there's and so I sort of felt like that, where like I so wanted it to just be a cookie, but there was a bunch of chocolate in it and I could not get away from it. But yeah, that doesn't. You can cut that out, Tobin, because that doesn't make sense to anyone else.
No, it's hysterical. This is I'm telling you.
Everyone loves chocolate chip cookies. So Tobin, I think you seem to have the strongest negative reaction. Can you tell me one thing that you think did work about this movie?
Yes, I love Connie Britton's relationship with her kids.
Oh my gosh, yes. And lube mom gave you.
Yes, yes. And actually with everybody, I like her relationship with her husband too. Eyes on, I know you'll have lots of things to say about that. So I believe that to you. But I really, and part of it's Connie Britton, because I will always love me some Connie Britton. And I think that she feels really genuine in this, even when the movie is sometimes not being. And I think she brings genuineness to the relationships that she has with the other characters. And so there are other things I like too, but I will start with that. Colin, what about you? What about the movie? Something particular that jumped out as something that really worked for you?
Oh boy, the main crush. He was a handsome sucker.
He's so cute.
Yeah.
He's cute. Yeah.
And I can relate, because he chunked out later in life. He chunked out. So I can relate to that. You know, it all happens, growing pains. I once had abs that were visible, you know, traded them in for the keg. No big deal. So yeah, I got a soft spot for old boy.
He's in one of my favorite films based on one of my favorite books.
Person Being a Wallflower. Yeah.
So if folks want to see more Johnny Simmons, please check that out. So you thought that you believed the crush, the sort of nerdy boy that felt used and betrayed.
I believed him?
Right. Is that what you were saying? Like you,
no,
his character?
No, the actual handsome guy. That's the one I liked.
Who's the, Rusty Waters.
Yeah, that's
Rusty
the one.
Waters.
Chris Porter.
Scott Porter?
Scott Porter. Sorry, yeah. I just assume everyone's name is Chris.
He chunked out in Law and Order.
Oh, is he on Law and Order now?
Pretty sure, yeah.
Interesting.
Just the guy in
Interesting.
Town.
Huh.
Street from
Jason Street, man.
Yeah.
And Connie Britton. Here we are, Friday Night Lights all over again.
I didn't put that all together, even though I thought of both of them as their characters.
You didn't put it together till just now?
No, I mean, I knew that. Oh, there. I didn't say to myself, "Oh, this is a reunion of two people from that show." But I independently thought, "Oh, that's Jason Street from Friday Night Lights," and "Oh, that's Connie Britton from Friday Night Lights."
I put that together, Act One.
Love it.
That was the first place my mind went. I thought that was the low-hanging fruit that wasn't worth mentioning.
Oh, it's all worth mentioning here. The thing that I like the best are the three friends. Right? Mm-hmm. I think in the male version of this movie, they're not going to sing the entire song from Beaches. Right?
Yes, totally.
And for me, that was a scene that started funny, then it wasn't funny, but then we were in it so long, it came back around. Mm-hmm. But I could understand that might not be the cycle for everybody, but for me, it certainly was. And then when you add the ongoing or the reoccurring scene of Brandy stopping at the fast food place to just tell them something.
Yeah.
While they're working, they keep going. And then we see the little nerdy boy do it too. I really liked their friendship and her coming around to that is something that should be valued and important. And she had, as we all do, let it, you know, her priorities get a little bit jumbled. But yeah, I liked the way that all resolved, and in the end, she was able to balance her burgeoning sexuality with her female friends.
I like that the scene that you're describing, the where they sing the song from Beaches, partly because that's where I really felt the hand of a woman filmmaker behind it, because they didn't have to, like, there's no discussion, you know? I mean, they have a little bit of a fight, but they don't have to then say, forgive you, whatever. Like, it's just, no, we would start singing the song from Beaches, and then you would start singing the song, and then we'd pull the third person in. Like, that, it felt very genuine, that moment, and felt like a thing that, you know, my brain, if I'm writing that scene, and I'm extrapolating from myself to male writers, but in my experience with other movies like this, that scene is a different thing, right? Like it would be hard to, you know, that felt like it comes out of experience in some way, some kind of, sort of a shared thing like that. And I appreciate that too. That's a good one.
Okay. Is there anything else anyone liked about this movie?
Oh, yeah. There are things I don't mean to say I didn't like things about the movie. I just didn't like the movie.
Right.
Before we move on, was Beaches really a thing? Was that like?
Oh yeah.
Was that a Paramount movie in the 90s for coming of age young ladies?
Oh, I think I think also for older ladies too. I think it's a little bit funny that it's high school students, but oh yes.
Huh. Yes, I think I think partly because Blossom was in it. Playing the young Bette Midler, and that would have been a big draw. And that's what I knew the movie from at first, was that, this is the movie where Blossom, like, is in a grown-up movie. And I remember Mom calling us in to watch that scene.
Yeah.
Or maybe, you know, and also I think the song was just huge. Like, every choir would have sung it. You know, these kids who were in high school would have known
like
the song.
And then, song.
Right. And then the fact that it's a movie about female friendship of which there aren't many. And so I think for young women of that age at that time, it was a movie that they would have, I do believe they would have, like, known every, you know, lyric of that song by heart.
Oh, so it had Maim Bialik?
Yes.
Nice. For the longest time, I thought they were referencing The Beach with Leonardo DiCaprio, which I was like, really? You want to see that? I guess maybe they think Leo's cute or something. But that went right over my head. I realize I'm audio, so you can't see the hand over the head thing. So I just have to vocalize that it went over my head.
Colin, are there other things that you liked? Isla wants us to talk more about things that we liked. Did you have other things you liked?
Okay, yeah. There's a few things that I liked. I should have taken notes. Things that I liked.
Well, I can name another while you think about it.
Yeah, go for it.
I'm curious to hear your thoughts about this. I kind of liked the Rachel Bilson character. I kind of like the sister and their dynamic with one another in a way. And I couldn't quite put my finger on why. I know she's famous, but I don't know from what. And so I don't have any associations with her other than that she's a famous person.
Oh, the 70s program.
No.
Oh, really?
I'm sorry. You're incorrect. Isn't that it?
No, that's not the
one. No, it's the Lisa Barton.
It's the OC. The OC.
The OC. The California.
Yeah. I always get her confused with
that's the
theme
song.
With Mila Kunis.
With Mila Kunis.
Yeah. They're interchangeable.
Yeah. Isa, what did you think about the Rachel Bilson character?
I don't know about women on this podcast. I liked her. Sorry, now my computer is trying to update, and so I'm trying to make sure it doesn't. Yes, I think at the beginning, you know, she's set up as kind of an antagonist, or this is a different kind of person, you know? Mm-hmm. But I think it could have come a little bit more full circle of, like, they need each other more than just Brandy needed her. I don't remember her name. But
Amber.
Amber. Thank you. Of course it was Amber, because it was 1993.
Right.
But yes, certainly she grew on me, and her wisdom in the world, I think, became clear partway through. But that's the other part for me that drew me to it in the beginning and probably why it has stuck in my mind are 1993 in Idaho.
Uh-huh.
I love the 90s, and I love a small town, but in the Mountain West, which you don't see a lot of. So that it's in Boise. It's just like, that's the closest we're going to get to a teen sex comedy about Montana.
It's true. I do love the 90s. I thought they got the hair right. And the clothes.
The music. I mean, so I think that really, there was a lot there that would just keep me entertained regardless of what was going on.
Right.
I'm trying to figure out the next thing to say, but Tobin, if you have something, you can go.
No, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to, because it is so explicit, I guess I sort of wanted to talk about that. And if the Frank sexuality worked or not, and if it was respectful enough or funny enough or anything enough.
Wow. Do you have a thought? I mean, I guess I knew enough about the movie going in that this is what it was going to be. Mm-hmm. That it was going to be, you know, raunchy, fairly explicit. You know, I mean, the trailer, as she writes down the names of the things she wants to try.
But like, I love it. Okay. But she doesn't know what they are.
Yes.
Like, that's what's funny to me. Sorry. I was just thinking about when they were at the little picnic table and she was like, I need to find a guy and then I can get him to, or no, then I can, however she says it, she is the active one and the, I can pearl necklace him.
Yes.
She says, that sounds elegant. And her friends are like, it's not.
It's not. Yeah.
But also you couldn't have that now because of the internet.
Right.
There was something to me charming about, also I'm a list maker, but like about her making the list. I did feel like her friends let her down a little bit in terms of like not explaining the things to her.
Yeah, totally. And that felt to me a little cheap because then, you know, I get that if I'm one of her friends, if I'm Fiona sitting across from her and she says that about, yeah, I'm going to pearl necklace him and, you know, that elegant. I'm going to say, okay, honey, we need to sit down and have a conversation.
Yeah, like that's not what that means. Yeah.
There are things you need to know. Let's go through this list together and I will explain what you're getting yourself into. And I think my read is that the movie didn't do that because they thought it was funny that she would continue not to know what these things are and have to look things up and ask the librarian and all that kind of stuff. And I just, that joke got tiresome for me as the movie went along, where it was funny at the beginning. And then I'm like, well, yeah, like, but in real life, this is not how this would happen, or these friends are not good friends. And the movie is telling me these are good friends. So.
Yeah, I agree. I was uncomfortable by it. Then when we get to the dynamic of, you know, rumors sort of start and various guys don't entirely know what's happening, but sort of create their own narrative about it. And then there's like, they're taking advantage of her naivete, but like her naive libido, if you will. Mm-hmm. That's the name of my new band. and so in those aspects, I didn't like it. Sort of kind of the beginning, I guess, like the making the list, I liked where they got to in the end. That was like, yes, these things are all important, but they're also just parts of life, and they can be as important as we need them to be. Like, I don't know, the way they came to it in the end, I liked. It was the middle that made me uncomfortable.
Right. Colin, how did the Frank sexuality strike you?
So sorry, Colin.
I actually thought it was going to be raunchier, just based on the trailer.
Oh, okay.
And it was, you know, there was, I think in a sense it was done with somewhat of a moniker of respect compared to what it could have been. There was nothing full on. Sure. There's nothing full frontal there. Mm-hmm. I mean, not even so much as a breast shot. Mm-hmm. It was, so in that sense, they did kind of keep it toned down. I don't know, with the friends not explaining anything to her, I think some of that could have been, they're probably used to her being a know-it-all all the time. And so it's maybe humorous to them that there's finally something she doesn't know, and they could kind of maybe lord it over her a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, on the raunch scale, it was lowish. I don't know who the intended audience was. Is it teens, tweens, adults?
I think probably adults who had nostalgia for the 90s, like myself.
Oh yeah, me too.
Huh.
That soundtrack was clutch.
Soundtrack was amazing. I think I agree with you, Colin. It wasn't this visually explicit all the time, but I think all the dialogue, like all the words, are not words that I hear all together in the movie that often.
Even in the 90s?
The other part that annoyed me. Okay, well, in 1993, I was much too young for any of this. So,
No, you're the same age as I am. You would have been in, like, sixth grade.
Yep. No, I was in third grade. Thank you very much.
In 93?
Yes.
No, you'd have been because 11.
No. Because for me, the year and the grade have the same number. So 93 is third grade, 94 is fourth grade.
How does that?
That's
a good one. I was in third grade.
That's a great way to keep track of that, though. That's impressive.
I wish I could do
that. Been in the third grade?
No. I was, well, okay. Wait, let's not get into how old I was in whatever grade. I would have been 10 at the end of third grade, yes. But in the meantime, the other thing that bothered me about the friends was the way the dad, and I love Clark Gregg.
Yeah.
I think he's a great actor. I think he's fun. I'm fine with the straight-laced, he's the judge, she's the judge. I don't like that he was slut-shaming the friends constantly.
Yeah, yeah, yep.
Calling them her loose friends. I think he could have, there still could have been tension there with your lazy friends or your, see average friends or, you know, any way to make them distinct from his daughter. But it was, speaking of low-hanging fruit, I feel like it was a cheap shot to just go after their sexuality.
Yeah, he made me uncomfortable through the whole thing. And I've talked on this podcast before, I think, about my feelings about overly overly virtue protecting fathers, and how that's a trope I would like to stamp out of the culture.
Sure, it's gross.
But it's gross, and I you know, there's just the possessiveness of it. It's just I think that he doesn't. So when I saw him and Connie Britton together, I believe her, and I don't believe him. Like, he feels like he's playing a type, and she feels like she's playing a character.
Right.
And that's the thing that then throws me.
Ooh,
I'm not then at all. I just don't believe him. Even at the end, when he walks in on them, and like his line about the back door. And
okay, I'm tired of everyone walking in on each other. Like, that also made me so uncomfortable, and I thought was unnecessary.
Yeah. Sorry. Go ahead.
I just what?
No, sorry. I interrupted you. Go ahead, please.
Like, give me one or the other. Give me they're both in vans, rocking the vans at the same time,
mm-hmm.
which would be life-ending, I think, in its hauntingness. Or him walking in on Rachel Bilson and Bill Hader.
Right.
But not both.
Plus the last
and
one.
And then the one at the end.
Right.
Like, that was too... Yeah, which also, that was confusing to me, because then it, like, I don't want to get into it, but, like, they weren't having anal sex.
No, I know.
So, like, the joke didn't work.
Nope.
To me. Okay.
Nope. It didn't. That's what I'm saying. This is what I'm saying.
And also, that's just so, that's also, to me, so passe in a... grossed out by things that you personally don't include in your life.
Right?
You know
right.
what I mean? Like, I'm not... so it's a little gay panicky for me?
Yeah, totally. Totally.
Which I guess is true to 1993, but you would hope would not be perpetuated in 2013.
Right, but we're supposed to laugh at it with him in 2013.
Right.
As opposed to...
So there's a lot of... Yeah.
It's
problematic.
And didn't like it. I did not like it.
Kind of, not that part, but other things were funny.
Like what?
I don't know. Like the poor kid. I know, right? Well, yes, here's why, because I want to bring this up.
Okay.
No pun intended. They're in a very empty movie theater, and like she is out to cross Handjob off her list, and I started laughing because like the previews weren't even over. Like, she was like, I'm at the movies, this is what I need to do.
Right.
And so as much as that was very cringy sequence, it was also to me, I thought the Johnny Simmons, the nerd boy,
yes.
Cameron, played that very well, was just like mortified, but also was not going to argue.
Right. Totally.
I don't know. So funny. And then the person who told them to shush was Darcy Carden.
Who's that?
Janet from The Good Place.
Oh, I don't watch The Good Place.
Oh. Wow. Oh,
no. I want to watch.
Right?
No. I want to watch The Good Place. I haven't yet.
It's so good.
Wow.
And she's also in Barry. And that's because at the time, shortly before and at the time this movie was made, Darcy Carden was nanny for Maggie Carey and Bill Hader.
Well, hold on.
Who used to be married.
They used to be married?
Maggie Carey used to be married to Bill Hader.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay. I'm learning all kinds
of
things here.
Together.
Wow. Okay.
And so Darcy Carden, while studying comedy and all that, was their nanny. So she got a
part in this movie.
Speaking bit part in the movie.
Wow. Okay. Mm-hmm. Oh,
and,
that's cool. Okay.
I was so excited to see her. I almost didn't recognize her also, but so I guess I was trying to say I thought some of the actors did a good job. But yeah, I guess I'm just frustrated because there are pieces of it I like and
right.
I want a female empowered coming into your sexuality movie, and I got it, and it's book smart. And so why did I make us go back to this?
Well, no. And you know, there are, one of the things I texted you that was fun in this movie is that everybody's in this movie. You know, we haven't mentioned that Donald Glover is in this movie. You know, like Donald Glover has a bit part in this movie, and executes it beautifully. You know, and I liked Bill Hader's. He had funny stuff with the younger kids at the pool. There's some interactions that they have. They're sort of more like wise than he is, or you know, worldly than he is in some ways. And I don't know. I like that. I like that kind of relationship that they had. There are things to recommend about this movie. And look, if you're someone who loves this movie because it came out at just the right time for you, and you were the age that was perfect to see this, you know, like I'm not saying it's a bad movie. I'm just saying I didn't care for it very much, you know. And I'm sure that there are movies that we love from our teenage years that people would look at today and say, oh, well, that's not very good, you know, and that may be beside the point. Like anybody for whom this movie was helpful in some way of showing a positive, mother-child relationship about sex, or showing a friend group that's a positive, you know, female group of friends who can get in fights and make up and, you know, like be real, you know, supportive of one another, even through, all these, their own issues, all that stuff. That's great. It just doesn't, it just didn't like, it didn't do what I wanted it to do. It didn't cross everything off my to-do list.
Oh, nicely put.
Oh, boy. I don't know.
Okay, now I'm getting antsy. So what other things should we talk about? Sorry, I'm not usually this...
Can I say one thing about the movie? So this movie was made for $1.5 million, which is not a lot of money for movies. It's a tiny, tiny budget, and it made that much money on its opening weekend.
Well, that's awesome.
Yeah, isn't that great?
I mean, I think what part of that is people's friends. You know what I mean? Like, you can get an Andy Samberg to come in. You can get a Donald Glover to come in. And so that's, once you get one Friday Night Lights, you get the next. That's awesome. It was financially successful.
Yeah, it made almost $4 million worldwide. So it did what it had to do, and it launched Maggie Carey's. Well, I don't know. I shouldn't say launch. It took her to a new level of directing. She's directed a bunch of TV since then. Some really great TV. Okay. You know, it did a lot of things. The other thing that was happening at this time is that Aubrey Plaza was sort of stepping into, I'm going to be able to get these very strange indie movies made because I'm Aubrey Plaza and I carry some heft now. And some of them are weird, and like some of them are super weird, and some of them are super weird, super funny, and some of them are not very good. Yes. But I like that she takes chances, and if this helped that to happen, then I'm really glad that out of this we get the Little Hours, or whatever the crazy things that she was able to get made.
Safety
that way.
Guaranteed.
That was before this, but Ingrid Goes West came after this, and Life After Beth. I mean, these things are.
Okay.
That are more strange. So I maybe that's a reason to be sort of grateful that the movie exists too. You know.
Sure.
I have seen one of those. I haven't even heard of the other two.
They're tiny and weird. Which one have you seen? Safety Not Guaranteed.
Life After Beth.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Aislinn, have you seen The Little Hours?
I have not. Not yet. You sent me to the trailer for it years ago.
Yeah.
And then I felt like I couldn't find it. And now I feel like it's streaming somewhere.
Yeah. It's very strange.
Did you like it?
I did like it, but I can see how almost nobody else would. It's an adaptation of this, like, middle-age text about these nuns. And these nuns, like, but the nuns are all played by... Like Aubrey Plaza is one of the nuns, and Alison Brie, and
love her.
Dave Franco is in it, and who's the John C. Reilly plays a priest in it. Molly Shannon is like the head lady. So they're acting and speaking in very modern vernacular. Like they don't hide that they're, and it's all like weird, funny sex jokes. And but it's this convent in the Middle Ages in, you know, the middle of Europe. And it's so, so weird. But I do recommend it as like a what is this thing? Anyway, so anyway, that's a real tangent. But that's a movie that I like that maybe got made partly because this movie was successful.
I think it was also a stretch for Rachel Bilson.
I don't know enough about her character on the OC to know how this was different from her, or what, how, in what way?
I mean, just like to play a more of a side character, and, you know, for the purposes of my comment, not how I feel, in quotes, like slutty bitchy sister. Doesn't seem entirely on brand. Mm-hmm. I mean, she's Heart of Dixie is the show that she, so after the OC, then the show that she was the
lead
what
of,
do you call it, like anchor.
Oh,
lead of. Yeah.
Yeah. She played Dr. Zoe Hart. It looks like.
Yes. On Heart of Dixie.
Yeah. I'm looking at the IMDb here.
So, you know, like pigs and cows and pie.
Oh,
and
that kind of, yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'm with you. Interesting. Yes. Yeah.
Hey, Joe, want to play a game?
Yes, let's play a game.
Yeah.
Okay. So, as we've mentioned, Colin, we play a game every episode, and they're all different, but I'm the rule master for all of them.
When you say it, it's so much less scary than Saw.
Do you want
did I use the wrong phrase? I haven't seen those movies.
No, you actually use that phrase every time. Yeah.
Do I? Oh my gosh, I had no idea.
You didn't know you were quoting Saw?
No.
I thought that was your joke.
I'm gonna have to reevaluate.
45 episodes into this podcast, and Colin helps us figure that out.
God, thank you so much, Colin.
That's what I'm here for.
So, as we've discussed, there are a lot of euphemisms for sexual activities that our main character doesn't know. But that can make things confusing. And I think it's also true that sometimes mundane activities sound inappropriate. Right? So
yes.
Like every 6 weeks or so, Natalie goes and gets a Brazilian blowout. Well, that's just something you do to your hair.
Mm-hmm.
But it sounds inappropriate.
It does indeed. Yes.
So I would like, I have 5 mundane activities, and if there's anything we know about isolation, it's full of mundane activities.
Uh-huh.
I would like you both to come up with a euphemism for the mundane activity that makes it sound like it belongs on the to-do list.
Oh, all right. Okay. Take the clean and make it dirty.
Yeah, make it sound dirty.
Sound dirty. Yeah. I'm with you.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, number one, I would like the dirty sounding euphemism for folding the laundry.
Okay. I got it.
Okay.
Stuffing the socks.
That's awesome.
Okay. Excellent. Point Tobin.
Woo.
Yeah, no.
Stuffing
okay.
the socks.
Number two, the euphemism that makes it sound dirty to get a manicure.
I mean, getting nailed.
Ooh. Yes.
Very good.
Point Colin.
Very good.
Love it. All right, here's one for y'all. Euphemism for meditating.
Okay.
Hitting the Zen spot.
Oh, man. Oh, wow.
All right.
Oh,
Colin.
Wow.
Point Colin.
Oh, that's
nicely
good.
Done. All right. Number 4. Paying taxes.
giving it to Uncle Sam.
Oh my gosh, y'all, it is a tied score 2-2. So I think for this final one, I would accept an answer from both of you if you both had one, and then I will determine which is better. The final mundane activity is trying on a sweater at the Gap.
Oh. Getting your knit to fit.
Stupid.
I'm so close, but I'm just not there.
That's
something
what
about
said.
Turtlenecks.
Oh, I thought that was
gaps.
The answer.
Oh, man.
God, turtlenecks are good. They're good.
Turtleneck
but...
in the Gap.
I mean, for such a valiant effort, I would like to call it a tie. If you'll permit me.
Yeah, I like a tie. A tie is good. Yeah.
I like a tie. Tie game. Thank you so much for playing,
good
everyone.
Good game. That's Yay. A good game.
If listeners played at home and you want to tweet me a euphemism for any of those activities, please feel free to do so.
Absolutely.
So, Colin, now is the time in our podcast where we decide if a movie is progressive or regressive. Is it a step forward or a step back for fearless women in front of and behind the camera? What do you think, Colin? Progressive or regressive?
Progressive.
All right. Do you have any additional comments or...
Yeah, I mean, it was like y'all were saying, it launched careers. It was a stepping stone for them to go on and do better things. It showed that there's, you know, that there is a female take on the trope that is the sexual mm-hmm. coming of age. Yeah, I mean, strong women behind and in front of the camera. I'd say progressive.
Awesome. Thank you. Tobin, what do you say?
I think Colin just convinced me. I was going to say neutral, but no, I'm convinced. I think that's right. I guess I was so put off by the Clark Gregg character that I was somehow, and I know that's not the movie's point of view, but it was leeching into the movie's point of view in some kind of way. But I know that's not right because of everything else that's going on here. So yeah, I'll say progressive. Yeah, I said gently progressive.
Ooh, I like that. Gently progressive.
Aislinn, what about you?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think, like you said, it was made for $1.5 million.
Yep.
Right? Mm-hmm. Which is nothing in movie land
right.
money. It was financially successful. As Colin mentioned, it got other people other jobs. And I just, I do love a lady written and directed sassy movie. So even though it's not perfect, I'll say, I'm trying to think of a word other than not gently. I will say.
Drum roll.
I'm so sorry. I've lost my brain. I'm trying to like, it's sort of like it winks at progressive, or it's like it whispers progressive. It's just.
Oh yeah. 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 There you go. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right.
All right. Very good. So next up, Aislinn and I are going to take a second shot at recording an episode on Widows.
We're so sorry it didn't work out last time, but we love this movie. And I look forward to discussing it again to see if we steal each other's lines.
Yeah.
You'll never know.
You'll never know.
But... probably. I'll be like, oh, I never noticed XYZ.
Yeah.
And Tobin will be like, those are my things.
Well, and you know, it'd be interesting to watch it again. I've only seen it the one time. So to see it again, what new will emerge from the, because I'm sure there's more there that we didn't catch the first time. So
absolutely. And this gives folks another month to see it too, because I do think it's an underwatched film.
Yes, right.
So we are going to have seen it and discussed it twice for you. The least you can do is watch it once.
Just watch it and tune in. So on April 28th, look for us to drop an episode on the Steve McQueen directed film Widows. Colin, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast.
Pleasure's mine.
Where do you like being found online? And if so, where can people find you to tell you what a wonderful job that you did on the podcast?
Twizzle me on on the Insta face, all the things. So you could holler at me at Woo Veterans on Instagram, at Woo Veterans on Twitter, and I occasionally stream on the old Twitch, the Big Harney. That's where I could be found.
And let's spell for non-Oregonians. Woo is W-O-U, Western Oregon. Yeah. So, Woo Veterans. Great. And do you have content that includes your dog on those platforms?
Almost exclusively.
Excellent.
Okay, there you go. So tune in for Colin and Kendler. It's worth it, folks.
Awesome. Aislinn, are you found online these days?
Reluctantly on Twitter, yes. At SassyNerdMT, which I also recently have been just posting dog stuff because it's the only thing that calms me down. So yeah, find me there. Tobin, what about you?
Yes, I'm on Twitter these days, but I just doom scroll, so I don't think you should follow. Send me pictures of your dogs, please, because that will help my blood pressure. So you can find me on Twitter at Tobin Addington, all one word, and you can find us on Twitter at Contenders_pod or on Patreon at thecontenderspod.com. Special thanks to our members who've joined at the marquee level or above, Sean Flynn and Jeff Addington. Thank you, thank you, thank you. The rest of you can become a member today, you can connect with our listeners. Let me start again. Become a member today, connect with our other listeners, and support our show.
We here at The Contenders are proud members of the Cage Club Podcast Network. You can explore all their great shows at cageclub.me, and you can keep tabs on all the Cage Club happenings on Twitter at Cage Club Pod. As always, thank you so much for listening. I'm Aislinn Addington.
I'm Colin.
I am Tobin Addington. I hope you're all staying safe and healthy and keeping everyone else safe and healthy by staying indoors and if you can. And we will see you next time on The Contenders. Okay, and now we'll do a 3-2-1 clap. Aislinn, if you'd be so kind.
Three, 2-1.
Okay.
It was close-ish.
It's close, yeah.
It's better.
Good enough for government work.
I will figure it all out.